You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 346, our preview episode for Notre Dame versus Stanford. Typically, this is one of the highlights of the year, to at least top 25 teams coming at each other. Last year, Notre Dame was, potentially going into the playoff with a win over Stanford. But this year, both teams are not looking so hot. Both teams are coming off losses. And it's definitely a different kind of game. However, it is a chance for both teams to bounce back and get things headed in the right direction. Randall's with me here as well. And today we've got some answers, Q&A with Hank Waddles from Go Mighty Card. And we've been back and forth with Hank probably, has it been 3 years now, Randall?
Yeah, I think so.
It's been a while. And we've had Hank on the podcast in the past, and this year we're just going to be reading some of his answers that he's had. But if you want to go on over and check out, his article isn't out yet, but he'll have a preview for the game as well. And you can go to gomightycard.com, and you can see the article over there. All right, so let's look at both teams, look at some of the numbers, and then we'll get to who is Stanford and what do they do well? And then some of the questions and answers from Hank. So just looking at the numbers for this game, Notre Dame is a 3-point favorite. And the matchup predictor is favoring Notre Dame 52.1%.
That's just crazy to me. Hey, it's barely, but...
Which the way you would be, from listening to fans, you would think that the Cardinals, even though they have had two losses, you would think that Stanford would be favored by 10 points, just from kind of if you would take the kind of the fans' attitude and perception and bring it into reality.
Yeah.
Numbers wise, Stanford is scoring under 20 points per game, just under 20 points per game. Notre Dame is no longer at their 39 points per game. They're now at 33.7 points per game. Points allowed per game for Stanford is just under 25 points per game, and for Notre Dame it's just under 30 points per game. So both those numbers have changed the last few weeks, last week for Notre Dame and the last 2 weeks for Stanford, where Stanford gave up some pretty big scores to Washington and Washington State. They gave up 44 to Washington, number 10 Washington, and 42 to Washington State.
And that's very unusual for Stanford to be giving up these points, which these are some of the better offenses. I mean, Washington just put up 70 on Oregon, so these are two of the better offenses in the Pac-12, but...
Right.
But still, this Stanford team, this is not normal for a Stanford team at all.
If you give me one pick now for a team to get into the playoff, it'd be Washington. Yeah. Not necessarily to win it all, but to get into it, I think Washington is most likely to make the playoff from everyone else. Looking at some of their passing yards and rushing yards, Stanford is passing. This was a huge surprise to me. They're passing for 166 yards per game, while Notre Dame's at 282. And the rushing is at 140 for Stanford and just under 150 for Notre Dame. And I do want to just look at their passing yards per game for Stanford. This shocked me, and part of it shocked me because of what Hank's response was as far as a key for Stanford to win this game. And so I went and looked more closely at their passing yards, and they have passed for over 200 yards once this season. And that was last week against Washington State, where they passed for 235 yards. Week one against Kansas State, they passed for 167. And then week one, their first game, and their second game against Southern Cal, they passed for 102, but they rushed for, I believe it was 300 yards against Southern Cal. So they definitely made up for that 100-yard passing game with a lot of yards on the ground. But then against UCLA, 143, and then against Washington, 184. And then last week they put up over 200. They were at 235 against Washington State. So passing has definitely not been something that they've been really good at.
Yeah, and they do have a new quarterback or first year starting quarterback, and with the offensive line playing the way they are, it just makes it harder for them. I'm sure they're frustrated because they're used to Andrew Luck a couple years ago, and then I'm totally blank right now. Kevin Hogan.
Hogan.
And they're both good quarterbacks. Obviously, Andrew Luck going number one overall. If you have a quarterback at his level, the expectations go up quite a bit.
All right, we're going to go on into the questions I had for Hank and his response to those. So my first question for Hank was, what's the primary strength and weakness of Stanford heading into this matchup with Notre Dame? And here's his response. I can give you several weaknesses, but for the first time in years, it's difficult to identify any clear strengths. Stanford has lost consecutive games for only the second time during David Shaw's tenure, and many of the hallmarks of the Stanford football brand have slipped. After 3 years of Andrew Luck and four more of Kevin Hogan, the jury is still out on Ryan Burns, and many fans are already calling for a change at the position. The Cardinal has consistently fielded one of the top offensive lines in the country, but this year they've had to break in three new starters and make midseason changes for the first time in recent memory. The line was dominated by Washington and Washington State, something that hasn't happened to that degree in at least 8 years. Also, Stanford has had an unnatural run of health over the past few seasons, something that's been attributed to the efforts of strength and conditioning coach Shannon Turley. But David Shaw's injury report this Monday mentioned 7 of the 22 starters, running back, fullback, right tackle, tight end, wide receiver, and both cornerbacks. Also, I should note that starting safety Justin Reed will miss the first half after receiving a targeting penalty in the second half of last week's game. So what are the strengths? I'll go with the defensive line, specifically Solomon Thomas. Not only is he one of the best linemen in the conference and a future first-round pick, he's become one of the team's emotional leaders. Not many details have emerged, but apparently he gave a moving speech to the team after Saturday's loss. Also, even though the defense has yielded 40 points in consecutive games, the secondary is deeper than ever, even minus those two starters. The defensive backs played well last week. This is what's surprising to me, and one thing that gives me confidence and hope in this matchup is that for Notre Dame, for the most part this season, apart from last week, the offense has been putting up big numbers. We've had some issues with run blocking, no question, but pass protection has been solid. Quarterback play has produced points, and our defense has been the majority of the problem, but I think there's definitely reason to believe that they're moving in the right direction. So this just gives me a lot of confidence in this game that, well, even though Notre Dame's not even close to perfect, the Stanford team coming in seems to have more question marks than Notre Dame does.
Maybe because we know what the problems are at Notre Dame. but, yeah, they definitely have a lot of question marks. And it makes me feel a lot better about this game. Just the defense. It looks like they, you know, the secondary that we should be able to throw the ball against them. But a couple of things that kind of stood out. We finally have a targeting call that's helping us out.
Finally.
Which we did have another one against Ohio State.
That is true. Bozo was taken out.
But here we are getting the benefits of a targeting call, even though it didn't happen in this game. And then the other thing is the depth at the defensive back position. They've gotten quite a few guys that Notre Dame was recruiting. So it'll be interesting to see who plays, because there's quite a few guys that Notre Dame wanted that ended up going to Stanford. And I think a lot of it just has to do with some of the guys that have come out of there. You look at Richard Sherman and what he's doing in the NFL and from Stanford. I'm sure that had a huge part in some of the recruitment of these guys, but that just goes to show you get a couple good guys in the system, your recruiting improves. And those are two things that kind of stuck out in that how he answered that question. And the other thing is the health of the players. We've talked about this in other podcasts, or in the last couple of years, when Notre Dame has had all these injuries, we're always like, look at Stanford, they don't have any injuries. And I've always said they know their strength and conditioning coach knows what he's doing. He does some stuff different than other strength and conditioning coaches do, and he did a good job, but like you can see, at some point it does catch up with you a little bit. It's too bad that this isn't a year that Notre Dame is fighting to get into the playoffs and they're playing a weak Stanford team. I'm not saying they're going to win this game, but I'm saying other years, every time Stanford comes, that's always the one game that you have to watch out for that could be a loss. And, you know, even preseason, this was one game that I would have said they were going to lose.
Yeah, same here. Hank did point out that he thinks the defensive line is probably the strength, and they are ranked in the S&P ratings. They are ranked 16th in the country through the first 6 weeks. So, and just if you're interested, Notre Dame is 32nd after their performance last week. So, I'm not sure what it was the week before that, but definitely a few spots different. Okay, second question that I had was, aside from playing better competition, what's been the overall problem the last two games for Stanford? Washington is simply a better team than Stanford right now, and I expect them to run the table and earn a spot in the playoffs, and Washington State looks much better than I expected. That being said, those scores are still surprising. After the Washington loss, easily the most complete ass-kicking a David Shaw team has ever received, there was still an urge to brush it aside as an aberration. Yes, the Huskies were better, but it was probably that program's biggest game in two decades. So they came to play, and Stanford didn't. The prevailing thought surrounding the team was that the Cardinal would rebound against the Cougars, a team that they had beaten 8 times in a row. That obviously didn't happen. As I said before, the offensive line is a mess, but Shaw made a point of saying that he didn't blame them. He said that every man on the team was responsible for those two losses, and I don't think that's just coach speak. This was a systemic failure. The offensive line isn't blocking well enough, which impacts the quarterback's ability to make his reads and get the ball to his receivers. The loss of the starting fullback has affected the running game. Receivers are dropping balls. Stanford has scored 3 offensive touchdowns in the past 3 games, and there are a lot of reasons for that.
That's a crazy number, only 3 offensive touchdowns in the past 3 games.
I wish I would have asked him if they're still using that virtualization program or system. I'm sure they are, but it'd be Hogan was given, I don't know if he gave it credit, but they said one reason that Hogan improved through the season was because of that.
His numbers went way up when they started using that, the virtual reality headset. I'm guessing they still are.
All right, a lot of talk has been about McCaffrey. He was taken out in the Washington State game, didn't go back in, and it's kind of up in the air. Is he going to play? Is he going to sit? And so I asked Hank about that. And then I also asked him kind of how he's been used or how his use in the passing game has changed through this season. McCaffrey appeared to want to go back into the game after his injury on Saturday, as players like him typically do. So there was hope that this wasn't anything to worry about. This week, however, Shaw said that he won't be practicing and there won't be a decision on his playing status until Friday at the earliest. My guess is that we won't know one way or the other until we see him in the game or on the sideline on Saturday. Look for him to warm up with the team, with a final decision coming just before kickoff. As for his role in the passing game, it was expanding in the first 3 games, and he often lined up as a slot receiver or the lone wideout. Teams have gotten wise to this, though. The Washington State defense was so worried about him that he often drew double coverage when he lined up as a receiver. and that wasn't a cornerback with a safety rolled to his side. It was true double coverage. He's good enough that he warrants that type of attention. I know that the Notre Dame is preparing and expecting him to play, which definitely you have to expect that he's going to play. Because the impact, if he doesn't play, is not going to be as big as, well, we're not really preparing for him, then he does play.
Yeah. My gut feeling is that he does play. The report is that he was just banged up against the other game. He wanted to come back in, but Shaw said there was no reason to bring him back in at the end of the game. They were losing anyways. Who knows what all that means? I mean, he limped off the field, but he was back on the sideline running in place. I mean, he was moving okay. If I were an opposing coach, I would definitely be playing him with McCaffrey against Notre Dame. I mean, if he's at all good to go. I mean, obviously, if he's not
healthy. You'd put his health on stake, Randall?
Totally. But this McCaffrey hasn't been doing as well this year. I mean, obviously, teams are prepared for him. I think a lot of it is just the preparation that defenses are putting in play. I mean, doing to get ready for him. But you know how it is when you play Notre Dame. Every player gets back on track. And I would get McCaffrey in there. If he plays, he's going to get back on track.
Even players that haven't been on track, all of a sudden find a track and get on it.
I mean, they did slow him down last year. They made the quarterback beat. They held him under 100 yards, which was huge. And they made the quarterback beat. And they did slow him down last year. But the way this team has been playing, this is, as a coach, I would see this game as a game that he can get back on track to his dominating ways.
Well, here's something to consider. In the first three games, he rushed for over 100 yards in each of those games. 126 against Kansas State, 172 against USC, 138 against UCLA. In their two losses, he rushed for 49 yards and 35 yards. And was held to under 30 or fewer yards in the passing game. So keeping him in check is essential to winning this football game.
Here's the other thing with that. I think a lot of his struggle is the offensive line. And I continue to go back to, like, Notre Dame's problem too, running the ball, is the offensive line. It doesn't matter how good that running back is. A lot of it depends on how good that offensive line is. I mean, look at what McCaffrey did last year and this year. Look at what Josh Adams did last year and this year. They make running backs look good. DeMarco Murray in the NFL in Dallas, was the season leading rusher a couple years ago, went to a different team and did nothing. They're making Ezekiel Elliott look, actually, he is pretty good. He's played Notre Dame, but what I'm saying is that here's another example of how important your offensive line is.
If I would be at Stanford, they do have a decent backup running back. I would just put McCaffrey as a sole receiver on one side of the field, maybe have one or two receivers on the other side, and then if they double team him, run it. If they single coverage him, throw the ball.
Careful, there's still enough time for the Stanford staff to listen to this and put that into the game plan.
They're probably already working on that. Okay, next question. There's concern in the ND camp that Kelly could lose the locker room. What's the general feeling of fans? And also, what's your opinion about the stability of the locker room and the chances of Stanford bouncing back and salvaging what's left of this season? There will always be Stanford fans, particularly younger ones, who are critical of Shaw and his conservative brand of coaching. When everything is working and running backs are galloping through gaping holes and gaining 8 or 10 yards against a weary defense, conservative football is beautiful and produces 30 to 40 points per game, as it did last season. But when the line is subpar and the quarterback is inexperienced, production declines and people want a spread offense. No one calls for change when the confetti is still flying after a Rose Bowl win, but it just takes a loss or two for the torches and pitchforks to come out. The good news, though, is that the locker room feels solid. Shaw has talked about not having to recruit leaders because every Stanford recruit fits that description. This isn't USC, where players openly question their coaching staff and look to transfer when things get difficult. Because of all this, I firmly believe Stanford will bounce back and salvage this season. I kind of like that response, Shaw's answer as far as leaders, that every person that he recruits is a leader. I mean, it feels good. I know that's definitely not the case at Notre Dame, where some guys are more capable of leading than other guys are. But I'm sure it probably helped stabilize the locker room hearing their coach say that. And maybe it is the case at Stanford.
Well, as hard as it is to get into Notre Dame, it's even harder to get into Stanford. And to get into Stanford, you have to have that drive and that willpower to succeed. I mean, you just have to take, as I look at it, you just have to take charge of what you want to do and try to get it done, because some guys can't even get in, want to get in there and can't, just like wide receiver Demetrius Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, it takes a lot of work to get into Stanford and even at Notre Dame, and so you do have a lot of more leaders in that group that you get.
All right, next question. Stanford has given up 40-plus points the last two games. What's the primary and secondary reason? The primary reason is that they've played the two best offenses in the Pac-12. I'm not sure there's any offense playing better than Washington right now. They just put 70 points on Oregon. And Mike Leach's air raid offense finally has some sensible balance, making it terribly dangerous. Both teams, however, exploited a glaring weakness in the Stanford defense. Over the course of the Harbaugh-Shaw era, Stanford defenses have been built around dominant linebackers, but that unit hasn't been performing this season. They haven't contributed to the pass rush, they aren't stopping the run, and they are woefully inconsistent in the passing game. Washington State did a great job isolating receivers on linebackers last week, and quarterback Luke Falk found them time after time for key conversions and touchdowns. Without question, this has to be the biggest concern as the defense gets ready to face DeShone Kizer and the Notre Dame offense.
Well, one thing that Stanford doesn't have to worry about is the linebackers and pass coverage, because Notre Dame doesn't know how to throw those short passes.
Against, in a hurricane.
Okay, in a hurricane.
Because remember, usually the criticism is they never throw the ball deep. Why don't they throw the ball deep?
I know. I just had to throw that in there, because if they would have done that last week, things might have been a little bit different.
Next question. The Stanford O-line has been criticized by the media this year. A, are they better at run blocking or pass protection? And B, what is the strength of this unit? I think the offensive line has actually been a bit better in pass protection, but there have been some breakdowns in this area. And you can go over to Inside the Pylon, insidethepylon.com, and there is an article about the game with Washington where they break down Washington's pass rush versus Stanford, and they have some videos there. I highly recommend the website. They have some great stuff there. I haven't looked at it a ton, but just from what I saw, it looks like some great stuff there. Even so, they looked good for stretches last week, but they were never able to open up anything for the running backs. This is, aside from them having mostly weaknesses and no strengths, this is the next best piece of news hearing from Hank, because we need to get our running game. We need to get our run defense some confidence, and it'd be nice to hold a running game in check. And that's good to hear. I mean, they still have McCaffrey there. Yeah. So, but even so, I still expect to give up,
Don't say it.
Probably 100. I mean, I would be happy with, if we'd hold them to under 150 yards rushing, I think I'd be pretty happy with that.
Well,
they're averaging about 140.
Okay.
But I don't think our run defense is better than average.
Yeah. It's not. And I mean, I know it's not, or it has been. It's just it's hard to tell, you know, with this defense. But this is just so unusual here from Stanford. We always hear about the fight in the trenches.
Well, and you hear what he, part of it's been injuries, and they're making some adjustments mid-season, which we happened at Notre Dame too. Was it 2 years ago in 2014 when there was a switch made, some position switches on the offensive line at the bye week. All right, next question: what's one player to watch on offense and on defense? The player to watch on defense is Solomon Thomas. He's an absolute beast on the defensive line and an all-around great kid. Cornerback Quentin Meeks would also deserve mention here, but his status for the game is uncertain. On offense, it's McCaffrey. And if it isn't quarterback Ryan Burns, whom you'll be watching anyway, I'll go with wide receiver Trenton Irwin. He's just a sophomore, but he's probably Stanford's best all-around receiver. Best route runner, best hands, and deceptive speed. He seems to be getting better each week. Another player on offense, and one who will probably be more critical to the Cardinals' success, is running back Bryce Love. He's been battling an undisclosed injury all season, but he's taken a bigger role each week. If McCaffrey is missing, Love will need to come in huge. Come up huge.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the name. I mean, suppose they wanted to use McCaffrey more as a receiver this year so he wouldn't get banged up. So they need other running backs, but I think they've still gone back to him just because they needed the yards.
Well, yeah, he's been rushing. But I gave you his total yards, but as far as rushing attempts, I mean, it's been over, in the wins, it's been over 20 attempts and over 30 against USC, and then 12 at Washington, and then 8 at Washington State.
Yeah, and if you just mentioned Stanford running back, you have to watch out for him. It doesn't really matter what his name is, who he is. They have gashed us quite a bit in the last couple years with the running back. Whoever was at the running back position has had success, which, again, it's due to the offensive line, but somehow they still get pickup yards against Notre Dame.
All right, almost towards the end here. Finish this sentence. For Stanford to win this game, Ryan Burns has to throw for over 200 yards and not throw any interceptions. With McCaffrey's status in doubt, the offense will depend more heavily on Burns, and he's going to need to elevate his game. I believe he's capable. If the offensive line can give him time, he can be good enough to lead the Cardinal to victory. And this is one where I just don't think... I think they need to pass for way more than 200 yards to beat Notre Dame. I know there's probably not going to be as many possessions for each team, but Notre Dame is going to be putting up over 30 points on Stanford. And I know their defense is solid, but we've put up points on everyone aside from it being a hurricane.
Yeah. And maybe if he does throw for 200 yards, that means he also ran for
300.
I'm not going to say 300, but I think if it's in the passing, they'd have to throw a lot more than that just to try to keep up with Notre Dame scoring.
All right, then my last question was, how do you expect this game to go, and what's your score prediction? This is the most difficult of your 9 questions. At this point, the Cardinal will take a victory any way it happens, so I don't think anyone would be disappointed if a hurricane blew through South Bend and Stanford came away with a 3-2 win. My first rational thought is to say that Stanford can't win this game, that the spiral will continue. But Notre Dame is kind of spiraling too. Their run defense is vulnerable, which is just the type of defense the Cardinal needs to see right now. I think Stanford will be able to establish a running game, control the clock, get a defensive touchdown, and come away with a 17-14 win.
I do see them establishing a run game and controlling the clock.
I agree.
I don't really see them getting a defensive touchdown.
I mean, it just happens so rarely. I mean,
with Kaiser, if the weather is nice, Kaiser doesn't get a lot of turn, but maybe he should have said special teams touchdown.
Yeah, I think that's more likely to happen.
If the final score is 17-14, then yes, Stanford will have won the game. I do agree with that. The only way Notre Dame is going to win if it's higher scoring.
Yeah.
If Notre Dame is only able to score 14 points, they will lose this game.
Well, yeah, I agree. If Notre Dame can't put up close to 30 points, then there's no reason to think that they're going to win this game. But that's why I'm pretty confident in this game, is because I think they will. I just think they're going to be able to score a lot of points.
I'll keep my score prediction for later this week.
And then Hank also sent some questions for us that I'd like just for us to answer kind of together in the podcast, and I'll be... So his question was, what's the current mood of the fan base, and what were your expectations coming into this season, and how are folks feeling about Brian Kelly? So the current mood of the fan base is extremely negative.
Yeah. You see the hashtag fire Brian Kelly.
And then, so let's take the first part and the second part. And what are your feelings about Brian Kelly? Definitely. Yeah. The fans are ready to get rid of Brian Kelly. However, the fans, that is short for fanatic, and those are the fans I'm talking about. people who are at least mostly reasonable see that Brian Kelly has had a really positive run at Notre Dame the past 7 years.
Yeah.
And so after people cool down, I'm definitely a huge supporter of Brian Kelly. I think he's the man to get Notre Dame to a playoff.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Kelly has figured out a lot of things as far as how to operate at Notre Dame with the off-field issues, suspensions, all kinds of drama that just happens at Notre Dame. And I think he can, that's why I believe he can get some things figured out with this team as well as far as playing.
And the second part of the question was, what were expectations going into this season? I think
double-digit wins.
Double-digit wins, but I think I expected 3 losses. So them getting their win in the bowl game.
I predicted, getting their 10th win in the bowl game. I predicted a two-loss season. And a lot of fans expected that to get close to the playoffs. Same as last year, be on the verge of the playoffs, either in the playoffs or on the fringe, just because of the schedule they were playing. How many first-year quarterbacks? I mean, here's another one. Stanford has another quarterback that has...
And the first half of the schedule was pretty easy.
Yeah. And so that's where it was at. You were so close last year to the playoffs, and they were expecting that again this year.
All right, here's another question from Hank. Aside from the Hurricane game, DeShone Kizer has been putting up spectacular numbers. Is there anything he can't do? How has he improved since Stanford fans saw him last season?
Well, he can't resist not throwing the ball downfield.
He can't resist spin moves when he's running the football. How has he improved since the Stanford game? And I didn't rewatch any of the Stanford game last year. I was going to look up just what his numbers were for that game, because DeShone Kizer looked really good at times last year, like really, really good. And I don't think... I don't know. I mean, I do think he's more accurate in his passes. But our running...
This year?
Yeah, I think so. Keep in mind, he's passing a lot more.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because last year he didn't need to be accurate. He just threw it up to Will Fuller.
Yeah.
But he had... yeah. But...
Here are his numbers from last year against Stanford. So he was only 13 of 25, had 1 touchdown, 0 interceptions, 230 yards passing, and he rushed for over 100 yards, 16 rushes for 128 yards, and 1 touchdown.
He hasn't rushed like that since then. I mean, he gets his rushing numbers.
Well, he gets numbers, but not he hasn't had big yardage gains.
Yeah. I do think, as far as what he can't do, he does every... I mean...
He's a pretty good quarterback.
Has flaws as far as his decision-making. That's his biggest thing, just as some of the decisions he's made this year on changing the play at the line of scrimmage, you know, going for it deep, trying to go for the big play.
Actually,
as far as physically, he can run, can pass.
One criticism too is he's been credited with 4 of his 8 sacks according to Pro Football Focus. So it does seem like he is holding on to the ball longer, and he's indecisive, especially the last few weeks when he's running the football. It kind of seems like instead of just going for it, he's kind of doing 3 things: still looking to pass, and then also trying to make decision if he should cut one way or if he should just run straight downhill.
And honestly, it is hard to say that he has improved since that Stanford game. I mean, it's kind of like he's playing like he did then. I think if you just look at the Stanford game last year, his accuracy, I mean, his numbers have gotten better, but it hasn't always been like that. I wish there was more. I mean, I think he could improve. It doesn't seem like he has.
But what would he have to do to improve on, though?
Well, it comes back to his decision-making.
Just who to throw the ball to.
Yeah. And when to get rid of the ball and when to hold on to it.
He's probably thrown the ball away 2 this season.
Yeah, see, he needs...
maybe 3 times, but it has been too seldom.
Yeah.
All right, his next question was, Equanimeous St. Brown has a lot more going for him than just the coolest name on the roster. Stanford fans are looking forward to watching his younger brother, Osiris, next year. What are his strengths, and how does he impact the passing game?
I'm sure they're very excited to see his younger brother next year, and that will probably definitely be a topic next year when Notre Dame and Stanford face off against the two brothers. Obviously, they're not playing against each other because they play on the same side of the ball, but I'm sure there'll still be competition there. And now the fight will be on to see who gets the third brother.
Equanimeous was at Notre Dame last year as a freshman, but he only, I believe he caught 1 pass maybe, but he didn't play a whole lot.
One of his big catches was actually overturned. When Wimbush was in there, he had a big catch. Was it a touchdown or it was close? And then there was a lineman downfield, ineligible lineman.
Oh, okay.
And so that was overturned. Okay. So that was the one thing I remember of him last year.
I think his ceiling, we've always seen that his ceiling is very high. He's got a lot of talent and ability. And I don't know if he had as much problems as some of the other guys, but as a receiving group, they kind of had problems with dropping the ball, but that has not been the case this season now. That was kind of the problem in fall camp. But he's had really solid hands. He runs routes well, and he gets open.
One of his strengths is just weaving through traffic once he does get the ball. What he can do after he catches the ball, especially for his size. I mean, a tall player, you know, you expect them to make a catch, but they can't do as much after the catch. And he can definitely do something with the ball after he catches it. And
he's definitely built trust with Deshaun Kizer, and Deshaun will be looking for him often.
Yeah.
He's leading the team in targets, and I expect that to be the same this Saturday with Stanford.
As far as how he impacts the passing game, he usually has, close to half the receiving yards?
Yeah, probably.
So,
what about the running game? How do you expect the Irish to use the ground game on Saturday?
Irish and running game in the same sentence.
Well, we have been averaging 150 yards per game, which
sounds crazy.
Which sounds like a lot, but most of those came in the first few weeks of the season. We had a lot of yards against Texas. Honestly, I think Notre Dame needs to switch something up in the running game. The media fans have been critical. Former players have been critical about how Notre Dame is running the football. Brian Kelly's reasoning is kind of, we're just taking what the defense is giving. So if there's an extra guy in the box, we're going to pass it. And although I do agree with that philosophy, take what the defense gives you, because when they over-protect one area, something else is going to open up. So I do agree with that, But the problem is when they have had favorable numbers in the running game, they're not getting good enough yards.
Yeah. But you've always been one that wants to establish the running game.
Well, I want to stay balanced.
Yeah. I'm not sure they're going to have a lot of success. One of the reasons is how Hank mentioned that one of the strengths is the defensive line on the Stanford defense. And Solomon Thomas. And there's just been so many issues with this run game. I don't expect them to have a lot of success.
I expect them to run the football and be about 50-50, but I don't expect it to produce a whole lot. All right, next question. The Stanford offensive line is currently in shambles, but part of that's due to facing two of the best defensive fronts in the Pac-12 over the past 2 weeks. What can we expect to see from the Notre Dame front seven? You can expect a couple things. One is James Onuwalu playing with a lot of heart, getting after the ball carrier and the quarterback. He comes off the edge a lot. And you can expect solid tackling from a couple of the guys. Well, maybe just one. At least from the linebacker group, Niles Morgan is an extremely solid tackler, and I've got a lot of confidence in him. And then the defensive line, I still see this as a question mark as far as productivity comes. They've played great at times, but at times they're not able to set the edge. They're able to get blown up and give up chunks of yards.
Yeah, they have been getting a lot more pressure the last 2 weeks since they have gotten rid of Brian Van Gorder, changed things up on defense a little bit. We've definitely seen more pressure on the quarterback. You know, it wasn't against what we would say great competition or in a hurricane. I mean, that's when it was last week. But this will be a good test for them to see if they can still get that kind of pressure on a good team. I mean, it's still Stanford. They might have their struggles on the offensive line, but this is still Stanford. They still have everybody's going to be giving it their all because of the rivalry that's there. But I do expect them to get a little more pressure on the quarterback than what they did in the first couple games of the year.
What would a win mean for Notre Dame this week, and what would a loss mean? To me, I feel very strongly about this. A win means that things have turned around, and I watched player interviews from earlier today. The team has not abandoned ship. I don't think the locker room's divided. And later on in the podcast, we've got some one clip I want to play and some comments. But a win, I think, is just evidence that things are turning around. It's confidence for the team. However, a loss, if Notre Dame loses this game, I expect them to lose the majority of the remaining games.
Yeah, I agree. We've kind of mentioned it each week, you know, that this is the game they need to win. This is huge. This is huge, you know.
Well, I didn't say that about North Carolina State, because I expected them to lose that game.
Yeah, not North Carolina State, but I know it was Michigan State. Duke, we just expected them to win.
Duke, we didn't really even.
Then we were in Syracuse, you know, and this is the game when they said they got rid of their coordinator, and so if they don't win their first game, then they don't have any faith in the new guy. But the stakes keep getting higher each week, especially with a loss. They need to win this game because this is when I think they could actually lose the locker room after this.
All right. Hank did have one final question. Give me your final score and thoughts on how you expect the game to go, and I'll respond to Hank on this one. But as far as for the podcast, we'll be talking about that on Thursday night's podcast, Friday morning. You'll get that in your podcast app. So let's just go over, Randall, some of the things that were brought up in the press conference earlier in the week. Brian Kelly talked about winning close games, and kind of talked about, I mean, it's coaching and the team finding ways to win. He says they still have confidence that they can win because he, as a head coach, has confidence in them. And they did switch up some things in practice. They've been practicing more red zone offense earlier in the week. Usually They save that for towards the end of the week, but they're starting to do that through the first practices of the week. And Brian Kelly was asked, as far as some other coaching differences, talked about how he's up in the tower more, where he can keep an eye on both the offense and the defense. He hasn't done that before, I guess, at least not while he's been at Notre Dame. And then the big question, well, do you have anything, Randall, anything more on the changes in coaching?
Well, he said he definitely isn't used to it. He's never a tower guy, so he's not used to it. He's used to being on the field. And then he said he is in the locker room. He used to be with the quarterbacks. I mean, not in the locker room, the
position groups.
The position meetings. Groups and the meetings. But he's been spending time with the defensive backs, which is good to hear. But then as far as the close games, he said since he's been at Notre Dame, they've won 21 games by 7 points or less. Which any coach or future coach in Notre Dame should just expect those. That's Notre Dame football. Like, that's just how many of the last coaches, that's just how Notre Dame wins. It's always the closer games.
Well, the undefeated season, 2012. How many of those were, by under a touchdown?
So they need to figure out what it is. He said it'd be easier if they lost by 40, because then you know exactly what to change. But he said so many of these games are so close. And that's, I agree. That's why I think it doesn't take much. They just need to make small changes, and they could have won some of those games that they... Him and the coaching staff just need to be willing to make those changes.
But do you agree that getting rid of Brian McGorder was a necessary and change in the right direction?
Yes. I'm not... Yeah, I totally think it was. I mean, and it's becoming more and more obvious.
Like, where are you at as far as... I know we kind of talked about as far as Brian Kelly, but are you at all in the bandwagon of it might be time to try someone different?
Not really, because I kind of dreaded the thought. Brian Kelly has kind of figured out how to operate at Notre Dame. And there's always some kind of drama, but he's kind of figured things out. And, you know, who are you going to get? Starting over just seems like... But, no, I'm not at the point of getting rid of him.
Okay.
He needs to make some changes, and, you know, Tony mentioned that, you know, maybe Swarbrick has to do something, you know, just kind of put some pressure on him. I don't know if he would tell him. He mentioned, you know, maybe put out some feelers as far as other coaches. I mean, just somehow
put an ad in New York Times, Notre Dame head football coach.
But I haven't really worried about it, because he's not going to – this season's already gone. They're not going to fire him. I mean, like, the sky literally has to fall before Kelly.
I don't think the situation will be improved with a different coach. I mean,
I think
there's a couple better coaches than Brian Kelly.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying that.
Definitely Saban and Urban Meyer are better coaches. And maybe even Harbaugh.
Here's the thing. Why Saban is a better coach is because he wanted to have a power running football pro style. He did not want this spread up tempo. But he went against everything. He hired Lane Kiffin. And they changed their philosophy. He completely changed his philosophy. That is one reason Saban is a better coach.
So if you'd see evidence of Brian Kelly being willing to change things up, like...
Well, I think he needs to look more at the guys he's surrounding himself with. Position coaches and stuff. Like, obviously, Brian Van Gorder.
Well, and that's why I bring that up. Brian Kelly is so stubborn. He's never willing to change anything. He brought in Brian Van Gorder, who had a completely different defense from what they did have under Bob Diaco. Yeah. It was the wrong decision, obviously.
But I still think there's a lot of things that can change and be fixed that will be a lot easier and more productive than firing Brian Kelly.
All right, so Brian Kelly and the players that were on media day were asked a question, I forget how it was worded, but basically what they think or what they feel about Brian Kelly blaming players and that what they thought of him taking the blame last week in the locker room afterwards. And my favorite response, I think, was from Mike McGlinchey, where he said, when he was asked, you know, was it good to see Brian Kelly taking blame for that? He said, it's not necessary for BK to apologize. We as players need to execute. It's on us, and we know it. I love that response of internalizing, it's my fault, And because if it's someone else's fault, you can't do anything about it. But if it's your fault, you can do something about it. And I think Brian Kelly, yes, he could maybe internalize a little bit more, but I believe he does internalize because you hear him all the time talk about better coaching.
I think that's pathetic because he knows his players. The big thing is about how he yelled at Sam Mustipher. He knows Sam Mustipher better than anybody else does as far in the football world.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what he can take with it. He's not just going to get irate and fly into a guy if he knows that that he can't handle it.
And
Mustipher responded good on the sideline. I mean, you're recruited by this coach. You know how he is. Brian Kelly even said, and Brian Kelly was asked about it, he said, he's going to be himself. He said, if people don't like it, then they just can't be
fans. If Notre Dame would be undefeated, this would just be a good, hard-nosed coach.
Exactly.
And it kind of, the double standards, I just don't like double standards. But here's another thing. He was getting criticized, or it was talked about, who else has Brian Kelly called out or yelled at on the sideline, and the question was kind of like, how have they responded? And the first one that I thought of was, does one stick out in your mind where he was beat red on the sideline yelling at someone?
Or was it Dane Chris?
Well, Dane Chris is one, but I thought of someone else. And Dane Chris, he transferred. Didn't work out. There's someone else that I thought of first. TJ Jones.
Oh.
I've never seen him be more upset at someone than he, or at least the way he looked, than TJ Jones in the South Florida game where the ball bounced off his shoulder pads, and I don't know if it was intercepted or not, but TJ just didn't have his head turned to catch the ball, and he was furious. TJ Jones ended up having an excellent career at Notre Dame.
Yeah. Well, the argument is that, Dane Chris, he was harsh with Dane Chris, look what happened, he ruined him. I talked to the guy this week that said, he completely ruined Dane Chris. Dane Chris went somewhere else and he didn't do good either.
Yeah, how great of a career did he have at
Kansas?
But,
and that was at the beginning. It wasn't a player he recruited. He didn't know him as well. That's different. These are guys that Brian Kelly recruited, has a relationship with, and I honestly believe he knows what they can take and can't take. I mean, even without trying, you should know that if you're around these guys as much as he is, I mean, your coworkers, what they can take and can't take. I mean, there are certain guys you can...
And if they can't take it, get another to know.
It's hard to replace some of these guys. One thing that I thought was interesting, which I've mentioned before with the media, and I'm not against it at all. It's just funny listening to the media, how the questions are asked. A good example is what Pete Sampson said. I think it was a great question. He just asked him about if he's gotten advice from people outside the Goog, if he's gone outside. And we've talked about it on here how, that's one thing Urban Meyer said he had to do is get advice. Great question. But it's just some of those questions, it's like, and how the running game is.
They're kind of insulting.
No.
Is that how you think Brian Kelly takes it?
No, it's not insulting. It's, this is what I think you should do. I'm trying to ask a question, like, are you listening?
I'm trying to give you advice.
Basically, Brian Kelly just said, yeah, I'm going to read your blog. Or, like, a lot of questions about the run game, like, your record is this and this when you've run the ball for over 200 yards. So do you think you should run the ball more? Well, obviously they're telling Brian Kelly, instead they're asking the question instead of just saying, run the ball more. You know what I mean? I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of funny because I wonder what runs through a head coach's mind when he hears some of those questions. He's like, you're trying to tell me how to do this. But it's a question.
Yeah, and to be fair to the media that are in the press conferences, they probably get tons of questions where they kind of feel obligated. And I'm glad
they asked those questions.
Especially Pete Sampson's question about the evaluation. Because
I wanted to know that.
I do too. I do want to know. And I guess the answer to that was he was asked if there's any evaluation from outside of the coaching staff or if it's all internal. And then he did say he talks to Jack Swarbrick, and he made it sound like there might be some other outside input. But then he didn't really say anything specifically except for his 27 years of experience.
Yeah. And basically, the media is turning a statement into a question is what it sounds like, which I'm fine with because it's a question. And they're doing what their fans want to listen, want to hear. And
All right, here's a response from DeShone Kizer when he was asked about Coach Kelly taking the blame for the loss against North Carolina State. And this is about a minute and a half long, so just bear with us here.
Blame is definitely not the word. In this game, there's 11 guys who are required to do their job. And in order for us to go out there and to give a better result than we've had in this last six games, he has to challenge guys. And when you guys sit up here and ask about specifics on guys, he's going to, you know, let you know exactly what happened in order for those for us, you know, not to come out successful. And that can be perceived as blame. But perception is you know, a part of what we do here when we're doing media. You know, James walks in and he gives an answer and it's perceived as if he you know, is saying that it's a horrible thing that coach puts blame on guys. But I'm sitting here having a conversation with him and all he's trying to say is that, hey, it's tough when a coach calls you out, but that we take that as a challenge here. We accept everything as a team, but individually you're going to have to get challenged to play your best. And when you're 2-4 right now, you know, everyone has to point the finger at themselves and look themselves in the mirror and accept those challenges so that we can come out and be more successful and hopefully, you know, put together the wins that we need to put together in the second half of the season.
All right, so some more of that internalizing from DeShone Kizer, kind of phrasing it for the whole team.
And in one, I don't think it was in Tuesday's presser, but Brian Kelly also mentioned, you know, about the Mustafer. He was asked about that, you know, was he blaming him, whatever, for the snapping. Bay said snapping, and, you know, everybody just assumed it was him. But he says it was a little bit of everything. The long snapper, the holder, the quarterback catching it. Quentin Nelson was tapping Mustafer for him to do the count and snap the ball. It was just a little bit of everything. So that's what he says he meant. I mean, there might be different opinions, but that's what he said he meant.
Well, and don't forget, I mean, the weather played the factor in that.
What do you mean weather?
And maybe you can't blame nature, I guess. Okay, wow. That felt like a really long podcast. Not sure how long it actually was.
One thing I did want to mention from the press conference was also the special teams. Marty Biagi is the guy that kind of came on the scenes last week because we saw him talking to Kelly in the game last week, and then they asked him, and he's a special teams analyst. He's the guy that watches a lot of film, you know, and he knows the minute details about the kicking, the punting, and snapping, stuff like that. And so he's just there to help out with special teams because Booker, the special teams coach, is also tight end. And so they're spending time on special teams. He also said that they need to, Brian Kelly said, him and the other coaches need to emphasize or have points of emphasis, like just the small details, you know where the ball is at. And it's not just about knowing where the ball is at, you know, what do you do then? Because he said there was one guy just running out of bounds to get away from it. I mean, it's just small details that they need to emphasize that they hadn't. You know, you can't just say, get out of the way. They have to tell them, look, this is what you need to do. This is where you need, just things like that. And they need to emphasize more of that. So, yeah, they are working on that.
They are. When they did their self-scouting and their issues on third down conversions for the offense, they believe it's on first down. There's too many negative plays and not enough positive plays. And so I'm still curious. I know they passed a ton on first down against North Carolina State. And now with better weather conditions, I think they'll still probably pass a lot, but maybe it'll be higher percentage type plays on first down.
Yeah, go look at the numbers. I saw that Loose Emoji broke it down pretty good as when they threw the ball. It was more about when they threw the ball last week because if you just look at the numbers, it looked pretty balanced. But I don't have the paper in. But basically, they had, was it six times that they were inside the 25-yard line of North Carolina? And on those passing plays, they basically passed every time except three. It was like, it was 20-some plays inside the 25-yard line of North Carolina. And they basically passed or got sacked, which would have been a passing play, on all but three of those plays.
Wow.
So a big key on that, it looked balanced, but look at where and when they threw the ball. That made a huge difference. So the only other thing that was interesting in the press conference is he was asked about the rookie wall, freshman wall. And he said that they every day the players actually fill out they have a wellness questionnaire, and that shows on his TV in his office, and he keep track of it, and especially what the younger guys are doing, how long they slept, you know, if they're feeling stressed, all this and that. Which, if it's a questionnaire, they can write whatever they want on there.
Yeah,
but they are trying to monitor that stuff. I mean, it was just interesting to see how he explained all that. I doubt a guy that was only got 3 hours of sleep will write that on his paper. So,
I guess let's discuss this. What freshman do you think would hurt the most if he does hit a freshman wall where he's not able to contribute like he has been contributing?
Man, it would come down to Studstill or Hayes.
Okay, I was thinking definitely someone on the defensive side. I mean, on offense, you've got probably the biggest contributor has probably been Stepherson. Yeah, and they don't need him.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely on defensive backs. I think it's maybe Studstill or one of the cornerbacks.
Yeah, cornerbacks. Love. That's true. That's what popped in my head right away. Yeah. It was Studstill and Dalen Hayes. Just got Studstill, you have less depth behind him. At cornerbacks, we have a little more depth. So yeah, hopefully. Here's one positive thing. These guys are all getting experience early. They're going to be good next year. Always right. Next year.
We're ready to wrap this up. Thank you guys for listening. And check back tomorrow for our opponents podcast, where we look at each of Notre Dame's opponents, and then also our score prediction podcast, where we'll give our final thoughts in the game and score predictions. Thank you guys for listening, and until then, go Irish.
Go Irish.